Well, it's Friday. That means it's time for Trending Now. It's another Friday here on the North Shore and elsewhere, I guess. I don't know about the international dateline. Anyway, this is Trending Now with Josh Arnold. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and our host is Josh Arnold. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. What's up?
Well, we've got Darren Sear, who's the City Council President, and Lynn going to be our first guest, followed by Donna Lee, who's the Human Resource Director in the City of Gloucester. And then we have Sherry DiBenedetti, who is a paranormal investigator, who will be our third guest, and talking about, she's on a television show, The Ghost Hunters, and some other things, and she has some things to promote, along with telling about what that work involves.
Sounds interesting. Sounds interesting. All right. So we have all that and more coming up in the next hour here on MSO News Sports. We'll get right to it.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright double-hung insert window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest is from the City of Lynn, the City Council President, Darren Sear. Darren, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Josh. How are you doing today?
Good, good. Usually start out and ask folks to give us a 2-3-4 minute bio, and then we'll get into some questions about your work in the City Council and the forthcoming election.
Well, I've been elected City Council Ward 3 in the City of Lynn since 2006. I actually became council president this past January, and I've always lived in the City of Lynn. I have two kids. Both my sons graduated from Lynn schools. My dad was a ward councilor back in the 70s. My family, we've been here for probably 6 or 7 generations. I've always been involved in the city. It's a great place to live.
Great. You're an incumbent seeking to be reelected. What would you say are the most significant issues that the City Council has addressed in the past term?
Well, one of them was the budget. At the beginning of the year, it turned out that we had a $10 million deficit, and the council really worked hard with the mayor's office to help alleviate that so we could keep services in the city, not have any layoffs. And we're still working every day. We've actually been able to come up with $7 million, and we believe we have another $3 or $4 million that are going to be coming in revenues this year. So that was pretty big for this year.
Now, you went to a trash sticker or bag or something just this year, which I think is pretty amazing. Gloucester, I want to say 3 mayors ago or more, had stickers, and now we have purple bags. But that you could hold out that long has been short of miraculous.
Well, I can tell you this. One of our biggest budgetary problems in the city is trash. We have over 100,000 people that live in Lynn, and up until we started doing our recycling program and doing the one barrel per unit in Lynn, the average household was generating almost 7,000 pounds worth of trash a year.
Yeah.
But through the efforts of the DPW and their recycling program, we've reduced that amount of trash, but we still have over a $5 million a year cost for trash. And there's a lot of residential houses, units in the city that are used in some ways as commercial properties because the owners or the landlords are profiting off of them.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they own many of them. So that's added an extra burden onto our budget.
Well, it's a complicated issue, I know, but if you have X amount of trash, aside from what the cost is to pick it up, you have to dispose of it, and that's done by the tonnage. So the greater the tonnage, the greater the cost. Once you charge a fee for trash to the residents, the amount of recycling will double or triple over the next few years, and that will make the tonnage that you have to ship to the landfill go down significantly.
Oh, you can already see those figures coming down. Totally agree with you. I mean, there are some households where we have multifamily houses where they're putting out more than a dozen barrels.
Yeah.
Three units. And, you know, and that's unfair to the single-family homes in the city where they're only allowed to put out one barrel.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can have extra barrels, you can pay for them, but still, you know, for the majority of people in the city, they're working to try to, you know, bring that tonnage down.
Well, if you go through the supermarket, and I noticed this recently, I mean, we have the recycle bins, and I put four out every week of recycling. And then the paper usually is outside the bin, the paper, the pizza boxes and the cardboard and the newspapers and all of that. So, and this, you know, that's one house. So a lot of what we consume is recyclable. And
right.
So I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, a part of waste disposal. So if you, I think you're going to be very pleased with how much those numbers come down over the next couple of years.
Right, I agree 100% with you, Josh.
What city councils tend to be something of a balancing act between a mayor's office in a city where the mayor is the chief executive officer, the strong mayor elected by the people, is charged with the administration of the city. Do you see that, you know, most charters have a check and balance system between a council and a mayor? How has that worked in Lynn, and how would you describe the any friction that may exist or the checks and balances that exist between the council and the current mayor?
Well, I think in the over the past year, the council and the mayor begun to really build a trusting relationship, where in the past we really haven't had that.
Okay.
And see, the mayor and I are working a lot closer with the council, with the vice president, Fuzzy Barton, and myself, with other councilors. Her door seems to be more open than it was in the past, where she's allowing councilors to come in and sit down and talk with her. But I think this budget crisis that we had really opened up everybody's eyes to realize that we had to put aside all of our differences and work together for the benefit of the city. And it seems to be working right now.
How was the change in the marijuana law, allowing it for recreational use, had an impact on the city, be it in terms of zoning, permitting, or enforcement, or other issues?
Well, we've just started to really address that in the past year, so we really haven't had experience
with
a pot dispensary opening up yet. But we do have two areas in the city that the city council and the mayor have agreed to zone for the pot dispensaries. And as part of the agreement between us and the pot establishments, they're going to be contributing money to the city to help with crime in the local areas. Also, as well as other projects that the ward councilor has. in that ward where they're going to be located.
Well, I know one of the issues that comes up is that although it's allowed in Massachusetts, it's still under federal regulations in terms of enforcement, and banking can't let any money in that is drug-related. So it makes, even though it's legal in Massachusetts, it makes the transaction a cash transaction. And there's concern that places that are strictly cash businesses are more vulnerable to theft, robbery, or crime. And I'm just wondering if that's the way Lynn sees it, and how do you fix that?
Well, one of the things that we made sure of was the security systems that are in place by both dispensaries that are coming into the city. Also, the fact that, as I said, they're going to be contributing money towards law enforcement for us to be able to use that money so that we can, you know, stay on top of any issues or problems that may arise. I have visited other dispensaries, and I see how they operate. It's extremely hard to be able to get into these buildings without having the proper paperwork and identification. And, you know, there's been a lot of thought put into this.
Okay, great. Listen, the social media today is having an impact in the context of people running for office, as well as post-election communicating with one's constituencies or constituents. How have you used social media? How do you see it being used among your colleagues, both for, on the election side of things and once folks get elected?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm probably one of the rarities in today's politics. I don't use social media as much as most of my colleagues do. One of the reasons being is I believe it to be more of a double-edged sword. As positive as it can be, you can see the damage that it can do us. See what's going on right now in the political world with the irresponsibility of some people, the way they use social media. I do text people back. I do do emails. I communicate with people that way. But I'm, I guess you would say, more of an old-fashioned type of politician. I learned that from my dad a long time ago. If I get a phone call or if I get a text from somebody that there's an issue or a problem, I go knock on their door. I look them right in the face. I find out what the issue is. In the wintertime, if your street hasn't been plowed, I literally go down there with one of my trucks. I plow the street for you. The tree has to come down, and falling down the street, we come down, we help clean that up. If people's basements are flooded, and I'm not the only councilor that does this. Some of my other colleagues have worked with me in the past. We've had situations where we've had homes flooded in the city, where we've actually gone in, the councilors have, with pumped people's basements out, help them, you know, get their electricity restored. So I'm more of a hands-on kind of
politician. Well, that's great. Let's hope that's contagious. Maybe you could come down and do some in-service in some of the other cities we cover. But that's wonderful. And there is something to be said for a personal touch. And it may be old-fashioned, but I think a lot of people appreciate that. I think it goes a lot. I think when you pick up the phone and answer somebody's call, to people our generation and up, and I may be aging you by saying that, but I think it makes a bigger difference than a text message or an email or a message from Facebook or one of the other platforms. What the city has a website, not to harp on technology, but the city has a website, and every city seems to have one now. Part of that is to showcase what happens in the city to people, both internally but also externally. You want to draw people in, and part of it has a functionality of, you know, showing the array of services that a city provides and how to navigate what you need, as opposed to wandering around City Hall and trying to ask people when you need to conduct city business. How has the city of Lynn dealt with that, and is there anything that they could be doing better or what?
Well, there's always room for improvement, and all of our departments whether it be inspectional services, the mayor's office, city council, DPW, even the police department, no matter what it may be, fire department. The communication through that service has been working really well, especially when we have an emergency in the city, snow's coming, like we were talking about earlier, trash, things like that. So the communication across the board from the city using the web has been extremely effective. We also have a large population of immigrants that are always coming into the city. So, they can go on the web, and if it's in a language that they're not familiar with, whether it be English or Spanish, they can come to City Hall. We will do everything in our efforts to help them out and get the services they need.
Great. I know that when I taught, I was teaching at one of the high schools there, graduate courses through the Gordon College education program, that one of the teachers had remarked that roughly 80, 85 different languages are spoken by the residents in Lynn. So it's certainly a very diverse population that you have to serve.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, even Latin America, we have, so many different countries that come here from there, Asia. We have Russian population, Cantonese, Vietnamese. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And every one of those groups has their own, little thing going on all the time, and we're always having to reach out to that community. Just recently, the Muslim church just had a couple of events where they invite the public to come in and get to know what they're all about, and,
Great.
So you can see what's going on in their community as well.
Thank you. I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Certainly wish you the well and continued success in your role as ward councilor and council president, and good luck in the coming election.
Thanks, Josh. I really appreciate you having me on your show.
Great.
I can do for you, let me know, okay?
All right, Darren. Thank you so much.
All right, Josh. Have a great day.
Yep, bye-bye.
The Gloucester House Restaurant at historic Seven Seas Wharf, 63 Rogers Street, Gloucester. This is owner Lenny Linquata.
We provide service and product better than anybody else. It comes directly from our boats right to your plate. We have fishermen that work great for us. We are wholesalers that we buy what we want to serve to our customers, and we put the rest of it right out in the market.
The Gloucester House Restaurant. Visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This is the freshest seafood you can get from our boats to your plate.
The Institution for Savings has always believed in giving back to our communities because our communities are such great places to live and work. Last year alone, we donated and pledged more than $3.9 million to local nonprofits, including local hospitals, schools, food pantries, art organizations, and more. Named one of Boston Business Journal's top philanthropic companies, we are proud to be your local hometown bank. InstitutionForSavings.com. Member FDIC, DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
Many aspects of estate planning are interrelated, and you can turn to attorney Bob Madruga for full-service estate planning to help you develop a comprehensive plan in providing for your future. Bob will work with you through the years to adapt your plan as needed, and he can assist you with managing wills, trust, probate, and taxes. Visit the law offices of Robert J. Madruga at 128 Main Street, Gloucester, or call today for an appointment at 978-283-6883.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Donna Leet, who is the Human Resource Director for the City of Gloucester. Donna, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Josh.
We usually start, Donna, and ask folks to give us a 3 or 4 minute bio. So tell us a little bit about your background and your family and so forth, and then we'll get into some questions.
Okay. I am a resident of Gloucester for almost 30 years now, and I have raised my family here. I have two sons who are grown, and I'm married to my husband, Bernie, and have a few dogs around. I have been an HR director, again, for about 30 years, and my background includes education and human resources. I have a bachelor's degree from UMass Amherst, and I've taken human resources advanced education courses at Harvard Extension. I'm a certified mediator, and my career started in human resources at a municipal hospital, Shaughnessy Kaplan Hospital, and then I worked for several years as the personnel director for the City of Salem. And after that, I had 14 years prior experience where I worked as the personnel director for the City of Gloucester. I then left in 2007 and spent about 9 years working in Boston for three different agencies there, each of which had its own unique culture. So that was a real interesting experience working in Boston for the Commonwealth. I worked for the Office of Consumer Affairs, where I got to provide HR support for six different agencies. I worked for the Division of Capital Asset Management, and then for the last 3.5 years before I came back to Gloucester, I worked for the Committee for Public Counsel Services, which was a very interesting assignment of 800 employees, 500 of whom were attorneys, and that happened to be my only non-union experience, which was very unique and educational. When I came back to Gloucester, I'd have to say a year ago last June, I guess I would classify myself as being recycled, that I'm now back here. And it's a fantastic opportunity for me to make a difference before I retire. I was pleased to give up a three-hour commute and return to serve our highly dedicated and talented city employees.
Great. So there's a range of stuff that falls to human resources in cities. Now, I remember back when Jeff Zager and Bill Squillis and other folks were the administrative assistant to the mayor, and personnel fell under them. But it's it seems to have blossomed out in many different directions. Can you go through some of what a human resource director in a city is engaged in?
Okay. There has been a great expansion of responsibilities from the time that we had municipal personnel departments, and now I believe we're the only municipal personnel department remaining here on the North Shore. The trend is definitely in municipal government to move to the full range of human resource services. So the municipal personnel departments have greatly expanded in their mission and scope to meet the needs of municipalities today, and I'm officially the city's first HR director, but my department is still called the personnel department until I manage to change the city ordinance, which is on my agenda for the next year. The traditional personnel role really reflects a lot of transaction processing, civil service administration, policy compliance, benefits administration, compensation, and recruitment. Human resources allows me to serve really as a member of the senior management team and provide more resources to help managers do their very tough jobs and provide more transparency and information to the employees regarding expectations and information that they need to help them do their jobs. Some of the things that the mayor was very clear about when she hired me as the first human resources director is she asked for a focus on training, that we have not perhaps given the training responsibility its fair share in terms of supporting a professional, highly professional workplace. Mayor Thakin's been very clear that it is the basic human right of all of our employees to have a professional work environment. And she wants me to work in that direction for the sake of our hardworking employees. So some of the things that we do in HR now is we have to take a look at training, succession planning, organizational development, talent management, and without a doubt, systems development using technology. So we're really advancing. I do a lot of management counseling in terms of labor relations and play a major role in union negotiations and all types of conflict resolution. Last on my list probably is helping folks through the fair and consistent enforcement of policy, federal and state laws. I found from my experience that that is very instrumental in building good morale.
So I know I shared with you a couple of historical stories. One was Andrew Jackson, when he got elected president, shared with one of his buddies. He said, if there's a job in Washington that can't be done by a Democrat, we ought to eliminate it. So that was in an era which brought on a lot of reform, that and Tammany Hall problems, and ushered in the civil service system as we know it, as it's referred to in public management, public service. On the other side, there is the story of the man whose job it was to climb up on his horse and ride up on a hill every night with his lantern and his rifle and be on the lookout for in case Napoleon attacked the British by sea. And that position was finally eliminated in 1918. So speaking a little bit to the slowness of how the civil service system sometimes works. How much is civil service a function of what you do as the human resource director? I know it's particularly important for police and fire, but not so as involved, I thought, from schools, other city departments. Tell us about that.
Well, what's interesting, I found when I got out of municipal government and was working for the Commonwealth, I was very intrigued by the fact that civil service is not widely used by agencies in the Commonwealth. It seems to be a much larger function doled out to municipalities. It is a cumbersome system, and one would argue probably that I think we'll see a trend that civil service in time will be phased out. We probably have double protection for employees because we're a union environment, yeah. And civil service and labor service has been delegated to municipalities. Again, it provides us a framework from which to operate, but it works pretty well for the hiring and promotions in fire and police because it gives folks confidence that it's a fair hiring process. So to the extent that we can substitute best practices in hiring and perhaps even commit to them by local ordinance or whatever, I think that's the trend that we would look for, that we would still give people the confidence that we have fair, open, and transparent processes in our hiring.
Good. Great. You mentioned training in one of your earlier responses, and I know that, one of my jobs when I worked in the school department is I did a training for all of the new administrators, the principals, assistant principals, directors that were hired mostly to acclimate them to how business was conducted in Gloucester as opposed to wherever they were assigned in another city or town. It was not a formal training program per se. There was obviously the stuff in union contracts that, you know, teachers in particular had to earn so many credits for renewal of certification and moving on the track and step schedule and so forth. But tell us about what your vision is for enhancing the training aspects in city government in Gloucester?
Well, you know, I'm very excited that I've got a unified team in HR that I work with. Holly Dugwillow, the assistant director of human resources, is actively involved in getting training going, as is Paul Russo, who we recently hired as the city's first human resources analyst. He's really taking a look at technical opportunities and systems development. But in the training, we have implemented a new onboarding process for new hires that come in at a dedicated time to sit down and learn what they need to learn about city benefits, and we give an introduction to city policies as well. Paul is involved with and will be developing the human resources webpage as a resource for all of our employees to provide them useful information, definitely get all our policies up so that we have more transparency. We are doing some active training. I'm very excited to be offering for the first time a leadership training program for our senior managers by partnering with Endicott College right here in Gloucester. This is going to be a management certificate program, and we're leading off with that in September. That's a real exciting opportunity for us. We have, through our IT department, we have access to wonderful online training components with a lot of management development and definitely more IT systems through lynda.com. And we just did a training survey with our senior managers to try to get their input for scheduling workshops in the upcoming year through MIA, the Massachusetts Interlocal Insurance Association, who provides a lot of our insurance. And we've got a terrific program coming on board. One of the things I've been able to do with the mayor's support and with her directives of what she wants in human resources is we've established a workplace health and safety advisory committee. And this is a grassroots effort with a representative from each union. And I'm leading that and co-partnering with our health director, Karen Carroll, and have a lot of new initiatives coming forward from that. New policies are being developed with training components for anti-harassment, the values of respect in our in a new code of conduct, a new Family and Medical Leave Act policy, new policies in workplace violence and domestic violence, and training will be associated with all of our policies. We've also, with Karen's assistance, been able to develop some employee wellness initiatives. We've got walking programs going and a Weight Watchers at Work program going. We feel strongly that we're moving in a strongly positive direction.
Great. Well, we've got about a half a minute left, but I did want to ask about what's with the community development director position? It seems to turn over a bit in this city, and there seems to be a large learning curve if the person that's hired is not from Gloucester or not somehow already connected to Gloucester. How much of a problem is that finding the right person and then getting them acclimated to be up and running?
We've got a strong plan in place going forward. We're very fortunate to have a very solid and stable team of managers below the community development director. We have major talent in our planning director and our director of economic development. And we're very fortunate to have Deb Laurie with her experience with HUD and CDBG grant administration. So we are solid in terms of our key services, and that will assist the transition of a new CD director. The other thing that I'm aware of is the mayor and Jim Destino, our chief administrative officer, plan to have weekly meetings with the new community development director to ensure that we go over the goals and action plans and agendas and assist the any transition process a new CD director will be going through.
Well, great. I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Certainly been very informative, telling us all the good things the city of Gloucester is doing. Appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule, and good luck going forward.
Thank you, Josh.
Thank you, Donna. Bye now.
Come in, take a seat, you're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Welcome to back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Sherry DiBenedetti, who is a paranormal investigator. Sherry, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Usually start with ask our guest to give us a three or four-minute bio, and then we'll get into some questions about the work that you do.
Hey, well, I'm a paranormal investigator on Ghost Hunters, which is on the Sci-Fi Network. And we're actually looking to move to another network, just not sure which one yet. And I'm also a part of a group that's called TAPS, which is the Atlantic Paranormal Society. Everybody on Ghost Hunters on the show, we are all a part of that group. And what we do is we go in, to their homes or businesses, and we help those that think that they're experiencing, paranormal activity, by investigating their claims, and of course we always use our equipment. We go in scientifically and use our equipment, such as EMF readers, voice recorders, night vision, video cameras, thermal cameras, things like that, and investigate the place to actually see whether it's paranormal or not.
Okay.
And I've been doing this for actually since the 90s.
Okay.
When I had my own kind of horrifying experience. So I've experienced these things throughout my whole life. However, you know, since I lived in a certain home and it became really haunted, that's when I really started doing all my research with the subject and started doing my investigations way back then.
Great.
Yeah.
So... I have to assume that when you there are a set of people who believe in paranormal activity, and there are a set of people who may not believe it, and some people may be in the middle. How do you when someone calls up and said, "I've got a ghost in my house," or "I've got these things that happen that can't be explained." Is there a pre-qualifying thing that you do, like a survey or instrument or something, to kind of find out, you know, if the person saying this is legit or if they're just pulling a hoax to waste your time?
Yes, absolutely. We have a whole questionnaire that we give to these people, and we actually get very personal with them. Because we need to know what we're getting ourselves into. First of all, right, if it is real or not, or if these people are just calling just to fool around, you know. But we do have the whole question. Now, some of the questions would be, you know, are you on drugs? Are you an alcoholic? Do you, you know, and or, you know, did you happen to even start any certain medications, you know, recently? Because, you know, obviously some medications don't really mix with other medications, and then certain things can happen. And some people actually don't even realize that.
Sure.
You know, and also, you know, certain things, did anything happen in your life that have, that's just changed? Maybe a lot of stress is going on. So we do get very personal with them to try to figure out things that that could happen. And, of course, they think it might be paranormal, but really it's just all these other things, either
sure.
medical issues or stress-related or anything like that.
Now, in the context of your, I'm gonna use for lack of a better, preparation work before you actually go in with the equipment to a house or a building or a property, what kind of investigations do you do regard to prior ownership or prior occupancies to understand what might be at play when you do get there?
Well, we always do a research on the property prior to going there. We always try to find out the history of the, you know, the building itself or the actual, you know, the actual property, what buildings were there prior to, try to figure out if there was any deaths on that property or even nearby that property. So that we always do that research prior to. This way, when we actually go in to investigate, those are going to be those questions.
Sure.
You know, would, you know, this used to be a hospital before. Were you a patient? Were you a nurse? You know what I mean? So that also prepares us for different kind of questions that we can ask. And then if we research and actually get actual names, you know, and we can always ask, you know, who's here. If we happen to pick up that name, you know, then, you know, I mean, that's a bonus, you know, obviously for us. So we try to research as much as we can because, like you said, it might not have to do with anything with those people. It could be, you know, 100 years ago somebody, you know, died on that piece of property, and now that they're coming around for whatever reason, you know, that's what we're trying to figure out is who it is, what they want, what they need, or if they're trying to tell the new homeowner something and what it is. So, yeah, there's a lot of research even prior to then.
Hollywood, through movies, through television, mm-hmm. depicts ghosts as having a mission of sorts in that they have unfinished business. Something happened in their lifetime, and maybe they that wasn't resolved, and so a portion or a presence of their former self comes back trying to fix something or resolve something that was not resolved. Maybe they died; their death was untimely or highly stressed. Situation. I mean, those are the kind of themes that show up in movies, the ghost on Flight 411 or 401 or whatever it was, and others. Mm-hmm. How real is any of that, and do you encounter anything like that?
Yes. There are actually many different types of hauntings, and hauntings is not a bad word. People think that that's like a horrible word. It's just, you know, when they come back, or, you know, that they're around. You can get either from, let me see, if there's a person that you see, you live in a house, and the previous owner is just, you know, they're still there, but you're living in their house, and you're changing things. Sometimes we get, you know, stop moving things. They don't like it, because it's their house still in their mind. It's still their house, and they don't like what you're doing.
Okay.
So they'll sort of make it miserable for the people now. So, you know, so we get that. And we actually have to talk to them and say, you know what, it's not your house anymore. You can move on. You know, but this is not your house anymore. It's their house, so they're going to do whatever they need to do. You can either stay and everybody can live together, or you need to move on. Because, you know, but you need to stop what you're, whatever you're doing. They're causing mischief, you know. But you, and there's also the other hauntings of guardian angels. You know, I mean, you have your past loved ones that have passed, and they're just coming back to protect you from something. For example, the house that I went into, and the the great grandson started drinking. Well, the person that was haunting him was his great grandfather, and he's coming back saying, you know, hey, you need to stop drinking. And, like, we caught his voice on the recorder saying the boy's name, and, like, you know, he's drinking, you know. So that's him trying to protect his great grandson. Also,
so when that happened, your work was to work with that young man and the family to confront that issue.
Right.
And that happened. And what was the result in terms of the paranormal interaction that had been occurring going forward?
As soon as that came out and he opened up to his mother of what he was doing, their relationship obviously got better and the haunting stopped.
Wow. So for the great-grandfather, the issue was resolved and he was at peace because he didn't see this going on anymore, and he wasn't going to, you know, move the clothes or whatever.
There was no reason for him to keep, you know, as soon as, like, he realized, you know, okay, his son, you know, his great grandson was much better, you know, and he wasn't in that kind of harm, everything's fine. He's good. The other thing that he also did, which he was not a good father, and we also did get the recording with him apologizing to his son,
okay.
Which his son would not step foot. This was actually a great-grandfather's house, and his son would not step foot back into that house because he had such a horrible, horrible childhood, because his great-grandfather grandfather was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I got the recording. He apologized and everything. So I told him, like, you need to come into the house, and, you know, and this way he can move on also.
Great.
You know, so he heard his father apologizing to him through the recording messages that I got. And ever since that day, he was much better. He was able to go into the house. He, you know, it lifted off of him too. So I think on both sides, the great-grandfather, he was able to apologize and release him, and also the son, it kind of released him also.
Not to put words in your mouth, but if we call that a happy ending story, because mm-hmm. of the resolve that took place, tell us about things that when you go into a property and it doesn't always work out that way. And you shared one with me offline about you went in and there was another team member who was physically moved across a room, and how, you know, be the energy of whatever was there. What was that like? And explain that to our audience.
I happened to, this person was kind of going towards the sliding glass door, and some force just picked him up. Now he was, well, he's over 200 pounds. Just picked him up a couple of feet and threw him, I don't know, 5-6 feet. And then he slid across the rest of, you know, rest of the way, like kind of like into the stairway. So a huge amount of a force. And I didn't feel any negativity myself. I didn't feel like I was in danger, you know, but whatever it is, I don't know if they just didn't like him. I'm not quite sure. But we never did figure out who it was or why that even happened. Nothing even happened prior to then.
Wow.
So it's not something that he said or he did. It just happens. You know, unfortunately, you do get those type of things. Sometimes they don't want, and we weren't recording at the time.
Yeah.
So I didn't get any voices. I didn't, you know, we didn't get anything.
Okay. What? Tell us about the equipment that you bring into an investigation and how it's used and some of the things that you pick up on the equipment.
Okay. Well, the first thing that we do is do an EMF sweep, which is a electric magnetic field piece of equipment that you go around and try to get the levels of each room. There are actually some people who are very sensitive to high levels of EMF. I myself, I'm not, so I don't really pick up any of this stuff. But for somebody who is, it could cause some people to, like, have hallucinations, headaches, dizziness, nausea, fatigue, the feeling of, like, somebody's actually there right with you. In our field, we call it the fear cage. So having that really high levels, people think that they're being haunted. People think that they're, oh, my God, there's something here. But a lot of times we go into the homes, it's just high levels of that, and we can pretty much either, you know, debunk it. I mean, we still go through the whole investigation, you know, just like, you know, just to make sure. But most of the time, that's what it is. And a lot of times they'll actually call an electrician just to come in and see why the levels are so high. And, you know, and they can actually correct it and then everything will be fine. But that does cause a lot of the paranormal, what they think is paranormal issues. But anyway, so that's the first thing that we do when we go in. If the levels are low when we do our sweep, then we know while we're doing the investigation, if we do get a higher level, it could be the energy of the spirit, because they will make those machines have a higher number, because that's what they all are. It's just energy. Let me see what other. We go to all of our claims, like when we go into the houses, we do the EMS group. And then we go over all the claims that the people have in their, you know, either the home or property, and we'll set up all of our night vision cameras. You know, we use the regular, the voice recorders, thermal cameras, things like that, and we just start trying to disprove or debunk whatever claims that they have. So
you might be looking at through a thermal camera and don't see anything, but you're picking up something, some energy or figure or force on that that you later see when you're reviewing it.
Like in the thermal, like we'll have it in our we'll have it in our hands. So if we're like looking and all of a sudden we see this heat signature where none of our team members are. Everybody's, you know, in a certain area. So if we're looking out and we happen to, you know, hear some noises, and then we're looking through the camera and we see some body walking by, that we, you know, visually, yes, we don't see it with our naked eye, but it comes.
You see it, okay.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that you've seen and heard or picked up from your equipment that you could share with us?
Well, I mean, we've seen, obviously, you know, we've seen whether real apparitions from the shadow people. We're usually touch things thrown, things move with the voices and the whistling. We feel the cold spots, doors opening and closing, lights on and off, footsteps knocking. Most of us experienced all of those things. You know, we do ask for a lot when we're investigating. So, you know, we do want those voices. We do want to get things on video. Again, we're very, like, scientific. We're not medium or psychic. We want everything as possible on these recorders. But we always do ask, you know, please, you know, touch us, move this, move that, turn the lights on. And you know, when you do get somebody who actually wants to interact with us, all these things happen. They do it for us. There's also, we had one, let's see, up at the end, we had people, the spirits, actually change the temperature of the room. You know, so if it was 78 degrees, we're like, all right, you know, can you put it down to 75? Then the temperature will go down to, you know, 75. And then we'll say, okay, let's put it down to 70. And then they go down to 70. They can actually change the temperature of the room for you.
Wow.
Yeah, so we usually...
Do they tend to like it colder? Is that it, or...?
Well, I don't really know if they really like it colder or not, but these are the things that we ask for because we're looking for proof.
Okay. So you also have some events that are coming up that your organization or you are involved with. Can you share some of that with us?
Yes. Since we're in Massachusetts, so on September, these are events that are still coming up that actually do have tickets that are still available, so if anybody's interested. But on September 9th is the S.K. Pierce Mansion in Gardner, Mass. October 7th at the Cinema Salem in Salem, Massachusetts. That's actually a midnight investigation. There are some conventions that are coming up. Also, there's a Salem Con every year. They have Salem Con, which is obviously in Salem, in April at the Hawthorne Hotel, which I'll be at. And Labor Day weekend, actually, this is in Atlanta, Georgia, but it's a huge, huge convention. And it's called Dragon Con, which I'll be there too. But again, you're doing these like home investigations, everything is free. You know, we come in for free. We're there to help people, you know, be comfortable in their own homes. So that's what we do. Everything is free. We come in, we help. We help the other side, and we help, you know, the homeowners.
So if somebody has an issue or a ghost or perception of paranormal activity that might be taking place on their property or their house, how do they reach you?
Everybody can follow me on either Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, or Instagram. And my handle is always at SherryMarie826, which is SHARIMARIE826.
Okay.
And just message, you can private message me in any of those, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, or Instagram, at SherryMarie826. And again, if anybody needs any private investigation, that is free. I'm also, if anybody wants to do a public event, because a lot of times I'll do events in the area, either do like theaters or you know, whatever it is, and they want to sell tickets to do stuff, I am available for hire. Also.
Okay, and would, if a Rotary Club or a Lions Club or something wanted you to speak at a lunch or breakfast meeting, or are you available to book those kind of things too?
Absolutely.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. We certainly wish you the very best going forward, and if you have some really good investigations that take place in the future, maybe we can come back and share some of those with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sherry. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Well,
I'm sold.
Okay. You notice I didn't ask any questions on that one. I didn't get involved.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm an astronomer. I'm an astronomer, and I've seen some very strange things at night. But I'll leave it at that. I've seen some strange things in the daytime, too. Okay, very nice. She's based in Boston, is that correct?
She's, she's on the North Shore.
Okay.
Danvers or,
very nice.
Or something like that.
Very nice. I think that was very interesting. Okay, so, we're rolling toward the, we're in the is it the almost the last half of summer here? We're in the last half of summer, rolling along very quickly. So I just want to remind people that we do have football coming up very soon. Only in like about 3-4 weeks from now, we'll be starting our football season. And lots of stuff planned, some brand new stuff with some new video, live streaming video, and some a lot more to do with video in terms of covering high school sports in the area. But also every Monday night we have North Shore Sports Night at 7 p.m. with Tim Kearns and myself. Every Thursday it's Connections. And then on Friday it's Trending Now with Josh Arnold. And by the way, if you take a look at Connections from yesterday, we got some tremendous interviews up there. And I do want to once again mention that Beverly City Councilor John Frates talks about the Ice Bucket Challenge in general and specifically, and the unbelievable amount of money that has been raised, very much in part because of his son, Pete Frates, and the involvement there. At any rate, some future guests, maybe?
Yes, we have Amanda Orlando Kestis and Maggie Howard coming on the 11th to talk about the Rotary Pancake Breakfast. They're co-chairs of that with the local Rotary Club, and it's one of the big fundraisers for the local Rotary Club, and a lot of that goes to elder and human service organizations. Andrea French is a candidate for school committee in Salem. Bob Cronin is a candidate for mayor in Newburyport. Joe Lando, candidate for re-election in Gloucester. Jen Holmgren and Joseph Gigoloni are both candidates for office, as with Steve LeBlanc. And Joel Favaz are all in Gloucester. Jamie Figueroa, candidate for city council in Lynn. And Tracy Valenti will talk to us about dementia.
Okay, sounds tremendous. And what you got to do now for me is you got to line up some kind of a UFO hunter for me, because... we had the paranormal. Now we got to get to the.
We had the past life person too. Regression. Yeah.
That's so right. That's right. We're covering all the bases.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay. Right. Sounds great. All right. Thanks, Josh. Have a great weekend. We will see you later. This is MSO News Sports, and this has been Trending Now with Josh Arnold.